Sports Yak.
Oh, my heavens!
One host knows sports.
And who's right there?
The other doesn't know sports, but somehow they meet in the middle. Corey Mann.
Get your big butt out of here!
And Indiana Sports Broadcast Hall of Famer.
This one will be relived.
Chuck Freebie.
Forever!
Do you like sports? Because we like sports. Let's talk about sports. It's Sports Yak. Sports Yak. It's Sports Yak.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that's not smart enough to know how smart we are, it's SIFPA. Welcome to SIFPA Weekly, streaming live most weekends, or available to download later in your podcast feed, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks!
Patrons get those perks!
Woo!
I'm your host, Aaron Dicer. No one gets hurt. 3 hours of work was my recruiting pitch to him for the podcast. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
Ahoy!
Each week we'll chat about movies, television, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. And please welcome our guest this week. He's our very own Conspiracy Santa. It's Ian Whittington!
Wait, is there any other... Well, sorry, first of all, hi! Is there any other type of Santa than a conspiracy Santa? Whole thing just a big conspiracy?
Listen, I mean, Ian, there are children who listen to this podcast.
I'm so sorry. Stop, please stop listening. Parents, I judge you.
I have stories.
Yes. The Mel Gibson version of Santa, which blows everything up, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. There's two.
The one
true
Santa.
There's also Krampus. We all know what Krampus is, which is closer to Mel Gibson's version than anything, really.
There's the Tim Allen version of Santa.
The Santa Claus.
That has completely screwed up my ability to spell Santa Claus anymore because of the pun with C-L-A-U-S-E. So now I accidentally throw an E on Santa Claus every once in a while.
Oh,
and
no.
Yeah, it's really
Santa
all...
Santa Claus.
Yeah, it's really... all Tim Allen's fault. Really, it's all Tim Allen's fault.
Everything.
This will not be the last time Klaus comes up during the podcast. Just a little teaser there. We've got some fun stuff we're going to do. We're going to do a couple reviews, as is our wont. One of them is going to be for The Tomorrow War that you can check out on Amazon Prime. And then No Sudden Move, which came out on HBO Max. And we've got a best ever challenge for best ever J.K. Simmons movies. We'll do our top five of those since he was hanging out in the Tomorrow War a little bit. But we're going to have a good time doing it. Ian, welcome back. It's good to have you here. We've had a lot of fun talking about the differences between England and America as far as like cinema goes and those kind of things in our members only pre-show. I appreciate you having those conversations and getting the antenna set up at your home to broadcast all the way over here into the States. It's just a lot of work you've put into this, and we want you to know how much we appreciate it.
See, not Ian me, doesn't the, know this. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it's the 30 gerbils that are running around powering the antenna that you've got to feel sorry for. I'm doing none of this.
Yeah, it's always the gerbils you feel sorry for.
Ian doesn't know this, but actually Aaron scheduled Ian to come on this week so we could remind him of how America... won the
oh, we're gonna do that. Cool, we're gonna go there. Very nice. Cool, good. Yeah. Starting strong.
Yeah, I don't Let's do I, it. Listen, cool. listen. I'm just
how's
saying,
that language working for you? Would you
don't
like
know what
tea?
You're talking about, man. Yeah,
I have to say,
give me a beer and beef jerky.
It was not intentional, but it sure is interesting that we have brought you here to celebrate the independence of the colonies this weekend.
Happy Ungrateful Colony Day.
Yes, yep. Exactly.
Ungrateful jerks.
Have you seen, it just came out, so it would not surprise me if you haven't. I just happened to watch it yesterday because that's what I do with new movies. I watch them. But
wait, what?
There's an animated film that came out on Netflix yesterday called America or something along those lines. And it's basically...
Oh, it's like America the Great or something like that.
Something like that. And
yeah, I haven't.
It's like a really, really, really discount Team America World Police kind of idea. Like, it's
nice.
You know, like, I think that's what they're going for. It's terrible, I'll just tell you. Like, I thought it was absolutely terrible. And there's a lot of talent involved, so I was kind of surprised at how bad it was. But it just felt like nobody in that movie from any level of organization or production was like, maybe we shouldn't do this. Like, there's like everything goes. America the Motion Picture. Thank you, chat, giving that to us.
Yes.
America the Motion. There were no rules. And the thing about no rules in comedy is it can feel very freeing, but it also immediately becomes, by definition, lazy, right? Because you're not having to work at something to put it in some kind of structure. And so there's no, you know, it's all just like, this joke seems hilarious, let's throw it out there. This thing seems way over the top and, you know, pushing boundaries, let's do that. And so I was unimpressed when I watched it.
Do you think, like, 10 days ago they said, oh, no, it's the 4th of July and we have nothing. Right, what can we come up with in 9 days?
Listen, it kind of felt that way. I'm just saying, when... Your cast is George Washington, whose best friend is Abraham Lincoln, and they are teaming up with Sam Adams, who is a frat boy at the local college, and they're fighting a werewolf version of Benedict Arnold.
Good Lord.
Thomas Edison joins the team, a young Chinese woman named Thomas Edison, who is all about science. And yeah, so I'm just, this is what I'm like, there's no, the look Andrew is giving me right now.
That is the definition of too busy wondering if you could to wonder if you should.
Yes, exactly.
Is this the one on Netflix I saw that has like George Washington crossing the Delaware as like the cover art or something to it?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. Well, I know which one to skip. No, actually, you know what, Aaron? I hate to tell you, everything you just described kind of makes me want to go,
I know.
What?
I know.
Everything you just said... It doesn't sound good.
Nope.
But I have to see it. It's like a car crash. You know, I gotta look.
I get it. I totally get it.
Yeah, Ian's got it.
Almost just for just the audacity of it. I totally get it. But there was one joke that I was like, oh, that was a good joke there. And I'm just going to spoil it right now so you don't have to watch it if you don't want to.
Good.
The only good joke, I'm about to spoil it for you.
I'm ready.
Feel free to jump ahead 30 seconds if you want.
Blow my mind.
We can't do that, Aaron.
There is a Fast and Furious parody section with horses instead of cars during this movie.
In space?
Nope, not in space.
Are they drifting?
Yeah, the horses drift and they have like neon, you know, on them. And anyhow,
I don't know if you're trolling us or not.
No.
What is this movie?
I am not. But one of the people says, these guys live their life a quarter mule at a time. So there you go.
It's a dad pun. That's what got Aaron. Of course it was a dad pun.
Yeah. I'm assuming you were a guest writer on this film.
No, that was the only good joke in the movie. Okay, so maybe that does mean I was a guest writer. Who knows?
Yeah.
All right, let's get into the show. We'll kick it off with a review for The Tomorrow War.
We are fighting a war 30 years in the future.
Is this a joke?
Our enemy is not human. We need you to fight.
You got drafted.
I will be back.
Why is this happening? What about the teacher's deferment and the veteran's deferment?
If I don't go, they're going to draft you in my place. But if something does happen to me, you and Miri will be taken care of.
If something happens to you, Dan, 70% of draftees do not return.
Sometimes a man does what's best for his family, not himself.
Move your shirt, please.
Wait, what's this for?
It was just a test.
Oh, a seatbelt. Was it a driving test? No, you don't have jokes in the future?
An ordinary family man named Dan Forrester is recruited by time travelers from 30 years in the future to fight in a deadly war against aliens. Chris Pratt starring in this one comes to us from Chris McKay is directing this, who I think his only other major credit is the Lego Batman movie. So kind of give you some context on that. Yeah, you've got some other people you've seen here before. You've got, I always mispronounce her name.
Ivan Stryovsky.
Is it Stryovsky? Yeah.
So, nice.
Anyhow, from Chuck, you may know her from Chuck or Dexter as well. Hopping in here and several others as well. What did you guys think about? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Ian, you get to kick us off.
High side of dislike, as close to it's okay,
okay.
But it eventually landed right in dislike.
Dislike. Andrew, what do you got?
Low side of loved it.
Ooh, I like it a little diversity. I thought I was going to be the one to start us off because I kind of enjoyed this movie. I am not on the low side of loved it, though. I am on the low side of liked it. I may be bordering into just liked it. I'm actually having a hard time letting my thoughts kind of, you know, coalesce on this because...
Yeah.
It's a movie that consecutively moments just loved, and then there were moments I'm like, this is a bad movie, and then there were moments that I loved, and yeah. So like it just yeah. like I'm having a little bit of trouble with this one. Andrew, tell us why you landed loved it. What did you love about this?
Well, I want to build off what you were just talking about specific moments. I broke this down into three sections. You know, first act, second act, third act. The first act I gave B+. I thought it did pretty good. It built tension, you know, like, what are these creatures? Like, what's going on and everything? Once you get to the actual future war, A++++++. That entire section had me. It was intense. The action was amazing. Creature designs were on point. There were actually some emotional moments that actually hit for me. The third act of this movie gets a C-. I think that the third half of this movie very mediocre, and it kind of tarnishes how good that second section is. But that second section is so good for me that I have to say I love this movie because it's the biggest part of the movie.
You know, you have similar feelings to me. I'll just kind of jump off that a little bit, unless you had anything else you wanted to mention
before I
hop in. But I'm in a similar place, but I don't think it was easy for me to divide my feelings chronologically like it was for you. Like, I didn't feel consistently the same way during the first third, you know, second act, third act kind of idea. I kind of went back and forth during both, but the primary thing I loved is the creature work, the sci-fi action, the world building. Like, they're not just good, they're great. Like,
really
the creatures
good. Yeah.
are incredible in this movie. Some of the sci-fi action is the best sci-fi action I've seen in a long time. And a lot of that has to do with the creature work. I think a lot of it has to do with the direction, kind of the camera work, understanding how to shoot it. And a lot of it has to do with just the world building. And they set some rules, and whether you want to believe them or whether they make sense or not, they stick to their rules. And this is hard for me to say with a time travel movie. You know, I'm notoriously hard on time travel movies. And, you know, it's not a spoiler that this is a time travel movie. It's right there in the description. But but I will just say, and I do want to do some spoilers on this. I think we will record a little bit of a
spoiler
on this. Yeah. There are some things we have to talk about that I don't feel comfortable sharing on the non-spoiler section. But I will say this. I think this movie handles time travel in a way that I don't prefer, but it is consistent in the way that it handles it. I don't think I got a little sniffle from Ian on that.
A little
bewitched nose tingle there. But I'm excited to hear what you thought. But as far as me, like when I was taking a moment to go, does that hold up? I was like, no, not really. But also the movie has told me this is the way it works and they're just sticking to that.
Yeah.
So I kind of liked the world building all around. The performances were decent to good. I don't know that anybody is giving a spectacular performance here, but everybody is kind of doing their job. I always love J.K. Simmons popping up in something. I think he may be my favorite as far as performances go in this. I don't know. So for me, it was kind of overall just like, there's so much great world building here that I think I really like this movie. And then there would be a moment, whether it's during the first act, second act, or third act, where I'd be like, well, that's just dumb. there would just be those moments where I'm like,
I got that pretty quick.
Yeah, why do you got to do that? Like, so I don't know, man. I think you tighten this movie up a little bit, and it's, you know, it's up there with Edge of Tomorrow, and you know, some other movies like that.
Very big Edge of Tomorrow vibes.
Yeah, agreed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, Tomorrow is right there in the title, so it's begging for it. It is begging for it.
Don't you Ian, mean live, we haven't really heard from.
Yes, exactly.
Ian, we haven't really heard from you on this one yet.
Yeah, Ian, give us some thoughts.
This is fascinating. I think we all feel exactly the same, but we've landed in exactly different places, which is fantastic. That's great. That's fascinating. I echo everything that you guys said. I just ended up at the bottom end of the... Because I think the things that bugged you guys really, really bugged me. The alien design is... fantastic. I think it's I want that I'm way more interested in that universe than continuing with Prometheus and all of that stuff, to be honest. Like, I think I want to explore a bit more of that. The performances didn't do anything for me at all. The emotional moments didn't hit. I saw the themes that they were running through,
right?
But for me, I think they were trying to, there's too many movies in here. There's You've got a sci-fi, you've got a high-concept sci-fi, you've got a disaster movie, a post-apocalyptic movie, because the war's pretty much done, a drama, some comedy, just an all-out war film, and then you've got this emotional drama family, almost one-man quest kind of film. Mm-hmm. And if it had picked up on any one of those things and run with it, I think I'm all in, and I think I'm with you, Andrew. I think I'm in the loved it, but I think this was trying to grasp at too many different opportunities and didn't quite stick the landing on any of them for me.
I think it's trying to be the, you know, man trying to find purpose, trying to find, you know, meaning. Yes. I think that's what it's trying to be consistently through. If there is a through line, I think that's what
that's
it
what
is.
I'm going but, with.
And that's part of, I mean, there's... That's almost part of the negative is we've seen that through line through the history of cinema so many times about, you know, another white man trying to figure out what it means, you know, what it means to be a good dad and a good father.
What a burden it is to be me.
Yeah. So, so that kind of has a little bit of that to it. But I do think that is the point. Like, I think that is what they are trying to is Chris Pratt's character is supposed to be our connecting piece. Throughout what we're experiencing here. I don't deny that there are different genre elements. I didn't feel confused by them, though. I feel like the movie's tone held up pretty well. So
I think it didn't under-explain anything or leave me scratching my head of, hang on a minute, that's weird and broken. It did all get wrapped up. But I think if there was a story that I'd want to follow, it's the soldier that, I don't know how much, that's probably going to be a bit spoilery.
Okay, it's we can hold train, it, we can save it.
The one who
hold that.
Keeps the, coming back.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. I want his story. If we'd followed him, I think I'm way more invested. I just don't care about Chris Pratt's. The most exciting thing about him is his name. It's like, Dan Forrester on a mission. I just did not care about him and what he was doing.
Well, there you go. Well, that will define the experience for you because it is a story about that character. And so if we're not connecting to it, that, you know, that makes complete sense. Andrew, you seem like you were heading somewhere.
Well, I was going to say that it sounds like you guys didn't, that I appreciated the, Yvonne Strahovski performance a lot more than you guys did. Her big emotional speech that she gives, you know, that hit for me so hard. I don't know why. It was just
good.
It was powerful. I thought her performance was really good. I liked her performance throughout the entire movie. And they do something with her character where something is painfully obvious that you think is going to be, you know, shown later in the movie, but they don't care. They're going to get it out of the way.
I loved that, actually. You know? I really did love that. I thought that was a great story movement. We'll talk about it more specifically in spoilers, but exactly. Yeah, I thought that
but
was a
I'm
great
But I'm glad
moment.
That they were like, because, like, I knew
of course,
something,
of course.
And I'm like, but they didn't, like, treat me like I'm not smart enough
exactly.
to figure that out already.
That is exactly it. The biggest disconnect from movies is when they hold a secret that everyone knows as if everyone doesn't know it, you know? And it's just the worst.
Yeah, give me some credit.
Yeah, so...
On the other end of that, though, there is a character plant for foreshadowing that I'll say has eruptive elements to it that I was like, this is so obvious that this is going to come back later on. And I kind of don't want it... Yeah, I don't want it to. I mean, it's... There's an element to this movie that didn't need explained that the third act of this movie tries to explain that. I'm like, no, leave it all a mystery.
Bad movie. Stop it.
Yeah, stop it. I don't want to know. But,
Interesting. I'm excited to talk about that in spoilers. I'm not sure I 100% agree, but I think I know what you're saying. But we'll cover it in a little more detail in our SIF spoil, which should follow this episode in your podcast feed. As far as the character that Yvonne Strofsky played, Stryovsky, I don't know. I'm just going to stop trying. We're going with YS. The character that YS played. I don't know. I felt like she's fine, but I think story-wise and plot-wise, and again, we can't get into too much of it until spoilers, but
sure.
I think she was starting from a tough position with that character, and there was so much about it I didn't buy that I think I was having trouble with her performance because of that, which isn't fair to her as an actor. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of one of those things.
She has the most baggage out of any character in the movie,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah. Betty Gilpin showing up here as well. I'm loving seeing Betty Gilpin and stuff.
That was weird. I'm not going to lie. It was weird. I was like, what? Really? Okay. I mean,
yeah.
Sure.
Go ahead, Ian.
No, I love that we got a sneaky bit of Marilyn Ratchkub from 24. I haven't seen her since Chloe in 24, and I think she's fantastic. Yeah. I'm like, yay, I'm rooting for you.
Yeah. Yeah, it was... It was interesting, her and Sam Richardson, the Gator character. They both, of all the performances... Those two felt to me like they were in a little bit of a different movie than everybody else. Did you guys notice that?
That and the other comic relief. I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
Cohen.
Cohen?
Sam Richardson?
Cohen is the character's name. It's Mike Mitchell,
Actor. Mike Mitchell. Sam Richardson was the one I was talking about. Nora Gator and the Mike Mitchell character. I agree. Those three felt like, they're in a little bit of a more silly sci-fi.
You're in an Edgar Wright film.
Yeah, that's a good
that's
way to
where
put
they
it.
Were.
And I did that was noticeable because everybody else seemed to be taking it a little more seriously than them on.
Rightfully so.
Well, yeah, it's a fair point. It's a fair point. Let's see. What else do we want to talk about, guys? What else about this movie do we feel like we need to go through to kind of fully get our thoughts out on it?
So you mentioned that you really liked the action,
mm-hmm.
and I agree. There's some of it that's great, and there's actually a couple of cool, really cool one shots in it. But for me, most of it felt like shooting guns.
I don't feel that way. There was a lot of explosion. There was a lot of artillery. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I liked about the movie that it wasn't just the explosion or the artillery on the screen. There was an understanding of what those explosions were doing, where that artillery was going. There were visuals that showed, the creature involved. I thought the creature involvement in those shots was absolutely spectacular. Like, none of the CG was bad enough that it was distracting for me. I thought it was all pretty well handled. I was really impressed by, yes, there's a lot of, explodey, but I think it happens... in a way that made sense visually and also furthered the action and intensity and of the scene. So yeah.
I totally agree with the what they're shooting at is very specific. They're giving very specific instructions and they mm-hmm. follow them. And that's, there's nothing worse than you've been told to do this and then you go and do something else mm-hmm. and the movie doesn't punish you for it. Like, they follow right. the instructions. But for me, it did seem like a lot of bullets flying around. But I may just need to rewatch it. Maybe I was just too invested in the story all, and
I,
just.
I mean, maybe I was just in like a you know, an action movie stupor too. Like, I may have just been you know, in a giddy moment. But
I need this.
I felt like the shots were very specific. Like especially a lot of the detail work with, you know, appendages and those kind of things, mm-hmm. and the reason they were shooting at a certain creature in a certain place, and you know, it felt right to me. So, like, I never felt like, oh, it's just more noise for noise sake or more bullets for bullets sake. It all felt very real.
Yeah. My one last thing besides no post-credit scene is that I think that this movie is very patient to get to that shooty, shooty, boom, boom. Mm-hmm. Because, like, there's a pretty good...
It is and it isn't. Time. I mean... Do they did the thing that so many movies do that I'm getting annoyed by, which is, bet you're wondering how I found myself here. You know,
I am so dumb. I have a running joke, which is, please stop opening the movie with the middle slash end of your movie. Yeah. It's so insulting that you think this movie can't grab my attention and I don't have the attention span to stick with you unless you give me 5 minutes of action up front. It's so annoying.
So besides that, Andrew, you were talking about the patience of the movie. Go ahead and continue. I didn't mean to interrupt you. But
No, you're fine. So building from that moment that you're talking about, Ian, like where that picks up to, like from where that starts to the big explosions and everything, I think mm-hmm. that the movie is very good at building suspense because while... During that time, you know, you're getting a sense of the environment, you're getting a sense of the dread, you know, you're seeing the horrors that are, you know, around them. And then by the time the, you know, it is time for the guns to go off, you are, or for me anyway, I was like invested. I'm like, okay, because then you get the cool creature reveal. And it's, I think the way that they actually did the reveal for these things was so well done. It just didn't pop out, you know, and you're like, there it is. You know, the slow pan, it's a good payoff, I think, because the entire movie up to that point, I think it's, I can't remember how long, but it had to have been at least 45 minutes before a gun was even shot in this movie, I think.
Yeah, because it's a long movie, but they do... I didn't feel like it was paced poorly, so I think I agree with you on that one. I think it, for the 2 hour and 20 minute runtime, I think it uses that time wisely.
And that's the one thing I would say, and that I'll make that my kind of one last thing, is, and I'll tie it back to what we were talking about with the intro scene. But I think the movie in so many ways is unconcerned with typical storytelling tropes. The movie has a lot of guts to do what it does with that third act. You could say in many ways, and I don't think you would be wrong in saying so, that the real climax of the movie happens halfway through the movie. You know what I mean? So like to be able to say, nope, there's 45 minutes of movie left and we're going to hold your attention for 45 more minutes. I liked that, and I like that. Now I know that last third act was your least favorite, Andrew, and I understand that.
Oh, yeah.
And I think considering the level of difficulty, that doesn't surprise me because you know there are a reason that storytelling tropes are the way they are, because you know we are creatures of habit and we like hearing stories in a certain way. They're more exciting that way. So it made it even more disappointing to me that they did that thing at the beginning when the movie itself throughout the rest of the movie is just concerned with telling us the story in the way that it wants to rather than in some sort of typical story way. So to do that, I bet you're wondering how I got here opening was, you know,
grumble.
Was really annoying to me because aside from even the trust thing that you're talking about, Ian, which is a huge part of it, I think the stuff you're talking about with patience, Andrew, is even better if they don't put that intro scene there. I think the buildup of the characters, finding our way into the family, all that kind of stuff, because what we're doing as a movie viewer now is we're integrating ourselves into the situation we're in, instead of going, oh, when do we get back there? Oh, I wonder how they get to that place. Oh, you know, like it just, yeah, it adds this element of, I know what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to be like every great movie has to have an incredible, you know, action moment at the beginning or something, you know, and it's, I don't know where we learned that. I was just talking about the movie Airport recently, which I saw, which is often credited as being the first real big disaster movie that Hollywood put out. That movie goes 90 minutes before any action. Like it's crazy, like how much it trusts the audience to be like, oh, I'm getting involved in these characters. I'm understanding who they are. I'm getting the mechanics of how they relate, where we're going with the plot, how that interacts. That's great. I love that stuff. And maybe they're right. Maybe modern audiences in general aren't like me and need that, or they're just going to be bored and walk out of the theater or turn it off at home or whatever. But I'd like it better the other way. I'd like it without that. So, yeah.
I totally understand what you're saying. It was just interesting because that section of the, or that, you know, intro to the movie, I didn't give it a second thought, but I can see how, now that you bring it up, it is obvious how that could really irritate somebody.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ian, did you have one last thing you wanted to mention before we move on?
One last thing was that Shooty Shooty Boom Boom was the sequel to Chitty Chitty Bang Bang that we never quite got.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So that was a direct-to-video version.
Yeah, there is a great pun title I'm sure somebody has made about a horrible action movie that involves a swear word off of the Chitty Chitty Bang Bang movie title. I'm sure that has been done before. All right, let's head into the next review then, shall we? Let's talk about No Sudden Move.
You said a man want to see me.
Alley out back.
Can't come in. What is he, white?
Oh, boy.
So what's the score?
We're sending a man that works in an office to pick something up. You are part of a babysitting team watching his family while he does it.
Good morning.
Everything is normal, except...
What do you want?
Is that something you'd say? Normal Monday? I'm gonna shoot you
right now. A group of criminals are brought together under mysterious circumstances to have to work together to uncover what's really going on when their simple job goes completely sideways. No Sudden Move is available on HBO Max and at theaters, I believe. I believe you can go out and see this this one. You've got a wide-ranging cast towards the center of it.
Everybody's in this movie.
Yeah, everybody's in this movie. Towards the center of it, you've got Don Cheadle, Benicio Del Toro, Kieran Culkin, David Harbour plays a large role. And then kind of on the periphery, you've got people like John Hamm, Brendan Fraser, who we haven't seen in a long time.
Yeah, that
well,
was strange.
I guess, yeah, technically we haven't seen him. But if you watch Doom Patrol, he's the voice.
Right.
So.
And Ray Liotta. And one other.
Billy Duke.
One other actor that we will not name. Because it's always.
Oh, good,
because
I nearly did.
Yeah.
I nearly just came right out with it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I always,
not Billy
I always,
Duke, though.
I always find it fun when a movie holds. Because his name isn't in the opening credits. And so.
No.
So our their name, I should say. Their name is not in the opening
credits. Ruined it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Anyhow. So, yeah, what did you guys... I should mention Steven Soderbergh directing this one and getting back on just being one of the most prolific directors out there. He's just putting stuff out all the time, and I love it. There was a time, 10 years ago, where he was like, I'm done making movies, and we all knew he was lying.
You got a second wind.
But he definitely is finding his second wind. So, what did you guys think? Like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Andrew, why don't you kick us off on this one?
I liked it.
Solid liked it. Ian, what do you got?
I'm the high side of liked it. I am cresting, but yeah, for the minute, I'm high side of liked it.
High side of liked it.
Aaron Soderbergh guy, what'd you think?
Yeah, I'm in the loved it category. Probably low side of loved it. Yeah, Soderbergh's got my number, man. I just think he has this... this way of telling stories where I'm just always invested. It doesn't matter what the topic is. It doesn't matter who the characters are. I mean, it does, but only in that he is telling me who they are, showing me who they are, showing me why this story is interesting, showing me why these, you know, people are important and what it means. And all the time underlaying these beautiful themes of whatever he has to say, usually about capitalism. Usually his movies have a lot to do with the idea of money and trust. This one specifically had everything to do with trust. This is an entire movie about who can you trust, and the answer might be no one. So yeah, this movie is X-Files Trust No One, the movie. That is really, really what Soderbergh is doing here. But yeah, I had a great time. I absolutely loved this. I think, Don Cheadle is perfect, at the center of this movie. He is a steadiness in the craziness that's going on, around him, and is our perfect connecting point. He's not a perfect person, but he seems to be at a point in his life where he's just like had enough of the nonsense, and he wants to find, you know, what his next chapter is. And I think if we have a rooting stake in the movie, it is with the Don Cheadle character. And it's interesting how it's, I'm excited to hear what you have to say, Andrew, as far as like, you know, where you might have found a rooting place otherwise or not at all. But for me, you know, I was in the place where I was like, this is the one of these people that is in the center while all this is swirling around, and then I'm rooting for them because they're just so no nonsense. They know where they're going. They know what they want, but the entire world around them is, you know, trying to undercut them, undermine them. Anyhow, I really connected to that. We didn't mention John Hamm. Flying in here for a cup of coffee, playing his typical FBI director character.
It does make you think, does this cross over with all of his detective films?
That's right.
It could easily be copy and paste.
Yeah,
I honestly thought that this was the prequel to Bad Times at the El Royale.
Or The Town, you know? Or whatever.
Or The Town.
Yeah.
Any of them.
Yeah, he's probably a Doctor Who type character that just pops into different eras to play the exact same role.
That's the story I want.
So anyhow, I had a really good time with it. I think thematically, we all know that is kind of where I land on what means the most to me. And I think the nuance of the way this played with, there's a scene where they're debating who gets to sit in the back seat, you know, and it's all about trust, right?
That's great.
And it's so great. Yeah. And this movie is full of those scenes. It's full of those kind of just like little character moments that service the characters, but also service the themes and also service the plot. And by the way, the plot in this movie, and this is maybe even a negative for some, if not maybe even a little bit me, is kind of confusing. It's like and when I say that, I just mean it's intricate. Like, this is not a scroll on your phone while you're watching type movie.
No.
If you want to know what's going on and what this movie is about, you're going to have to pay attention. And I kind of dig that. I kind of like that.
There isn't an exposition at the end which just explains every single step of this is where you went wrong and this is what everyone else was doing. It kind of trusts you to have followed what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I see some people.
You know what that scene reminded me of? Do you remember in The Matrix Reloaded when he's talking to the architect in the room and the architect is just going on with all this high rate, you know, a whole bunch of like fancy words and stuff like that. And you're like, okay, you don't really need to go on like this. Nobody talks like this kind of thing.
Yeah. Which scene reminds you of that?
Are you talking about Mystery Man? How he's explaining
Mystery
how the
Man.
World works and... How there's a plan and they don't know they're playing it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
All right.
He reminded me of the architect in The Matrix where I'm like, okay, yeah, you know a lot of words that have a whole bunch of consonants and stuff like that. Here's my main issue with the movie. My main issue with the movie is I can't think of any character in this movie that had an arc. I think that every single character in this movie, maybe I'm wrong, but I can't think of any character in this movie who was different from who they were at the beginning of the movie. And it's really like, that is really what helps me invest in a character. Mm-hmm. I think actually out of our two main leads, which I think are Don Cheadle and Benicio Del Toro, I was actually more invested in Benicio Del Toro because he kind of felt more like a angel on the shoulder to Don Cheadle, you know, like you need to stop being greedy, you know, stuff like that. You know, he kind of seemed like a voice of reason. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But Cheadle was... Go ahead.
No. So much of that stuff, though, was wrong. He wasn't being smart. He wasn't being wise. He was being racist with a lot of that stuff. Like, that's like part of his character was to part of the story is how nobody around Don Cheadle understands who he actually is. There's this beautiful moment with Mystery Man that sums this up for me, and the Benicio Del Toro stuff does as well, where Mystery Man is talking about changing his name from Lowenstein to Lowen, and Cheadle just says something like, yeah, that Stein thing must have been pretty hard, or something like that.
Yeah,
and it's just
that's exactly
this beautiful,
the same.
Understated, like, mm-hmm. this is my life, like, you know, kind of thing. And it's so great. And the Benicio stuff, a lot of it, like about the greed and that kind of stuff, is assumptions and projection that he's making about Don Cheadle. And we know it is because of what Don Cheadle does at the end of this movie. Like, it is.
No, we don't know until the end of this movie.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Which still doesn't make sense. No, like, so you're saying that up until that point, you believe that what Benicio Del Toro was saying was okay. Like, you thought it was, you thought up until that point it was coming from a place of like, hey, you're playing with fire here. Because that's what I took from this movie, is Benicio Del Toro's like, I didn't really pick up on any racial tones from Benicio to Cheadle. I felt it was more, well, there are some, obviously,
the beginning of their relationship is, I mean, yeah, those things are overt in that, in those moments, yeah.
But in the specific moments when Benicio Del Toro is talking about, hey, you're playing with fire, you're Icarus, you're flying too close to the sun, you need to quit now. I don't think that that's a racial element. I think that's more of a professional, like, courtesy sort of thing where he's like, hey, we both do the same thing, and this is, you're smart enough that you should know when to back out.
We had very different reads on those characters. I think the Ronald Russo character is bad from the get-go. Like, he undermines Cheadle every chance he gets. He tries to have him killed twice in this movie. He only reason he goes with him is because he sees maybe it'll lead to some extra money at some point that he can kill him and take his share. When he mentions the things like the greed and those kind of things, there's almost always, I'll have to rewatch it, but I'm pretty sure there's almost always an element of, you know, your people are always too greedy. There's this element of he's assuming.
I don't remember that.
Yeah,
I don't remember.
And I'm not 100% sure. I've only seen this once, but I do remember those elements of, at least in my read of the character, was he is, through his own presuppositions, because of Kurt Goins' race, saying those things. He's saying, you know, oh, you're never going to be satisfied. You guys can never get enough. Like, it has nothing to do with the person. Like, he's not, I never got the sense he wanted to help Don Cheadle's character in any way through this movie. I thought it was all, and again, that goes with the theme of who can you trust. And I don't think the Ronald Russo character was in any way somebody Cheadle was supposed to trust on any of that stuff. So
interesting. Yeah, we definitely watched two different movies then, because the entire time for me and Ian, I'm sorry, but
no, you're fine.
The entire time I was like, I think this movie is just nobody trusts anybody, not specifically Benicio Del Toro and Don Cheadle, Goins and
Kieran Culkin character.
Well, Kieran Culkin's character is interesting in and of itself. I think that he is the definitive wild card, you know, of that trio. Yeah. But also, I think he's the most informed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that that's really what kind of divides everybody.
If you guys have time, maybe we should rock a sip spoil on this one, too, because I feel like there are some things especially towards the end of this movie. Ian, why don't you weigh in on some of this? I'm curious to kind of hear
your
interpretation of that relationship, you know, kind of overall, if you, you know, just kind of how you feel about the the conversation we're having.
No, that discussion and back and forth was more entertaining than No Tomorrow or whatever we just reviewed. No Tomorrow Movements.
Yes.
War. So on the Russo stuff, I think what I read from Russo. It was, him and everyone is underestimating Goines. Everyone. No, and whether that be because nobody's heard of him or it comes back to the race thing as well, and that hideous thing where there is an apparent lack of intelligence, which I totally believe that Russo's character thinks that and everyone else in the movie seems to. I think that's where it comes from, is you can't possibly know the big picture, so I'm not going to treat you with any respect. And all along, Goines is the only one that sees the various setups. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and sees everything and sees the big picture, and everyone is patronizing to him and he just takes it because that's his life. He's had to fight through all of this and he's just confident that he has the cards. He doesn't always know when to not play them, but he sees the game probably better than anyone else.
Yeah. Yeah, and there is another element thematically of this movie that is very much about redlining and the racial situation in the 50s and the idea of wealth, where does it come from, how is it accrued? I think Soderbergh is definitely working in a lot of racial themes here, as well as the themes of trust, which, by the way, those themes are very much interrelated. I think a lot of what you said is true. And because of those things, I think that is why I did, connect more to that character.
Was the fisheye camera just a gimmick
Let's talk about it. I definitely don't think it's a gimmick. Soderbergh is way too particular about what he does. There were several shots. And by the way, part of what he's doing with that camera is that it is an era-specific wide-angle lens. So it's not technically a fisheye. It's the type of wide-angle lens they would shoot with in the 50s. Shoot movies
like a panoramic sort of shot.
Yeah,
sort of,
yeah. And what it allowed him to do was to get shots of clarity with characters from different rooms and to see both sides of conversations. There are three or four different scenes that really depend on this wide angle to be able to give us what he wants to give us. There's one where Ray Liotta's character is at his office in his desk while his wife is in the kitchen, and seeing both of them and their reaction to each other is so, I think, important to Soderbergh because of so much of the themes of the movie about trust, and he wants to see the characters' reactions to what people are saying in different rooms, because you can read on their face the distrust or the disbelief or those kind of things. And that happened, I think, at least three times, maybe four, that it was used in that way. I definitely think it was specifically done with a purpose. Now, that is different than whether or not it's distracting. And whether, because that can also be true. It can also be distracting to the audience if you notice the sides of the screen, wrapping a little bit, warping a little bit. But I didn't mind it. I kind of liked it. I'm a sucker for Soderbergh's visual choices. I think he's always doing something interesting and creative, whether it's shooting from an iPhone or, doing a particular lens or whatever the case may be. So, yeah.
I really enjoyed that aspect of it. For me, it felt like it's a movie set in the 50s, but it felt like it was filmed in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea how you pull that off, but I was getting French Connection vibes. A lot of that was the score as well, and just the opening credits are very 70s as well. And I just, that hooked me from the first few seconds. I was like, I'm in my happy place.
Yeah,
it definitely did have an Uptown Funk kind of intro to it. And then it said, boom, 1950s. I'm like, oh, well, okay, so we're 20 years earlier than I thought we were. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's the Tomorrow War is funk.
Yeah, that's the element of it, yeah.
I am steadily moving into, loved it territory. This happens with me sometimes. But I just keep thinking of things that Soderbergh chooses to do that just are so interesting and fun. The way he shoots cars in this movie, and the way he shoots the city of Detroit in this movie, is really, really cool, because this is a city that at the time was the third largest city in the country. Like in the 50s, Detroit and the auto industry were,
Oh, that was America.
Yeah, it was like it was L.A., New York, and Detroit, you know, and now it's L.A., New York, and Chicago. But, you know, for a time, it was like Detroit was, you know, one of the biggest cities in the country. And now it's, you know, it's abandoned, basically.
Yeah.
So, you know, and he's kind of getting at the heart of that and kind of like he does some stuff with shot angles on the cars in this movie where he's emphasizing how a window is rolled down or how a door is opened or how a trunk closes or like this movie is very automobile centric in a really interesting way, especially knowing it's in Detroit, you know, like, and that's kind of whole thing that's going on. And again, the whole like underlying MacGuffin, which isn't technically a MacGuffin because it really is, you know, we do find out what it is
it's essential and critical, yeah.
Is about automobiles. So, you know, like, and of course it is. So yeah, anyhow, I that's another part of this I really, really loved.
There's a final
sorry, go on.
I was gonna say there's a final scroll in this movie that I felt was unnecessary.
I don't know. I think it's exactly what Soderbergh wants us to like. He told the story he wanted to tell with the characters. And so with the scroll, he wants to go, look, this is the point I was making, or this is the MacGuffin. Basically, the final scroll is like, you know, the MacGuffin means something. And this is because, by the way, it's true. Like that this whole movie is based on a true conspiracy that really, really happened. So, you know. It's not on a true, like the story in here isn't true, but the MacGuffin is true. Interesting enough.
Yeah.
And you got to think a lesser, might be a bit mean, but a lesser director might have opened the film with based on true events.
Because, right. Yeah. They would have put that scroll at the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But I like that we're figuring it out with the characters. Like Don Cheadle doesn't know what this is about. He just knows it's some sort of, doesn't care.
This is dollar bills. Yeah. Doesn't matter what's in the envelope.
Yeah.
And when the MacGuffin is revealed and when you do get the resolution at the end, the stuff and the way that vehicles are shot, for me, I was just like, oh man, that pays dividends. It pays off even more because you can't not notice it as you go through the film. And you're like, that's unusual. And then when you realize what the document is about, you're like, oh man, that this is really about the cars. This is a movie about cars and you didn't tell me.
Yeah. I think we're ready for one last thing, especially if we're going to do a SIF spoil and go a little more into detail. Mm. So if there is anything else you guys want to chat about, Ian,
no post-credit scene.
There's no post-credit scene. That is true. Ian?
I have one last things.
Sure, go for it.
Did it feel a bit Coen-y? Like the structure and how some of it was written gave me like Coen vibes.
Sure,
and,
sure.
Yeah, I loved it. The crime
stuff felt especially Coen-y. Yeah.
The double crossing and does anyone really know how this all ended up okay for most of the people? And they're all just like, well, I don't know how we got into this mess, but it seems to have resolved itself. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Heaven forbid if Disney and Soderbergh ever team up, we will lose Aaron entirely.
I'm not going to lie. I was thinking, after I watched this movie, I don't know why it popped in my head, but I'm like, if Soderbergh ever directs a Pixar movie, Aaron is going to flip.
He will implode.
Because while I was watching this movie, I'm like, I bet Aaron is loving this right now.
Yeah. Especially if it's a musical.
I feel like I'm the negative guy here, but I like the movie, don't forget. I liked it.
Yeah,
a musical Soderbergh Pixar film.
Yeah, it'd be amazing. Andrew, you are in the unenvious position of liking a movie a little bit less than the other two people. I've been in this position before, and then it sounds like you're the one that hates the movie. I think that is good for you.
I liked it.
I know. Did you have
it's the same with Tomorrow? Land. I didn't hate it. It just sounds like I did.
Did you have one last thing other than no post-credit scene, Andrew?
No.
Yeah, I think we will talk more in spoilers about other things that I want to touch on. But overall, I had a really good time with this. And Soderbergh's got my number. Let Them All Talk just kind of went completely under the radar for a lot of people last year. And it was one of my favorites. He's just consistently telling great stories. And I did a ranking on Letterboxd of the 19 of his movies that I've seen. And there are several I haven't, especially from earlier on. The most prominent I haven't seen is probably Behind the Candelabra. I've never gotten around to seeing that one.
It's interesting.
But I was amazed at like going through that list, just like, oh, like he may be in my top three directors of all time now. Like, you know, and that's tough company. Man, I may have to do that list. I may have to make that list in my brain because, you know, you've got Hitchcock and Spielberg are just givens. And it's just like, who else do I put on the Mount Rushmore? You know, like who else is up there for me? And, you know,
I don't know, but I just saw Danae leave the chat. You said list.
Yeah, she's not a big list
fan. I would love to rewatch this film. Yeah, I would love to rewatch this film with you, Aaron, because watching somebody enjoy something, like, I really enjoyed it, but you really enjoyed it.
I gave it a sorry, Danae is in the chat. Yeah. and like somehow creating a paradox where she comments in the chat that he's not wrong about Danae leaving the chat. So like I'm trying to figure out the paradox in my brain here about what's
going on. Let's just list all the possible paradoxes it could have been.
So basically my one final thing is I am excited to talk about if there were any parts of the actual story or plot that you guys are still confused by. Like if there's still parts you're putting together of what happened where, what happened when, you know, those kind of things. Because I think I pretty much got it, except for one thing that I'm mm-hmm. still noodling around and trying to piece together.
I wonder if it's the same thing.
It might be. Look forward to talking in the sip spoil. Mm-hmm. All right. Before we head on to our best ever challenge, just a reminder that you can be a Sif Pop member. That all happens at Patreon, patreon.com/SiftPop, and there are different levels that come with different perks. You can go check it all out there. One of those perks is a weekly bonus podcast. Every week we record a little conversation, 5, 10, 15 minutes about something, either that you guys suggest or that's on our minds. This week, as mentioned, we talked about the difference between movie culture in the UK and the US. If you want to listen to that, as well as have commercial-free podcasts, monthly video hangouts, those kind of stuff. You can check all that out at patreon.com/SifPop. And thank you to existing SifPop members. Love you, appreciate you. You really do keep this thing going, and we appreciate it.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
All right, let's get into the best ever challenge. Best ever J.K. Simmons movies. Quite a little list of movies Mr. Simmons
it
has been in.
It was much longer than I expected, and yeah. I feel immediately bad for having not seen 90% of it.
Nice. We'll start at number 5. We will go to number 1. I will let you know ahead of time. I just picked a couple honorable mentions. There are certainly plenty of them, but I just kind of picked my like favorite J.K. Simmons movies.
I have a pretty good amount, so I'll just pick up the scraps at the end for those.
All right. We'll start at number 5, and I'll kick us off this time. I had Up in the Air at my number 5.
Good movie.
This is just such a great film. Great performances. I rewatched it within the last few years, and just really, really holds up well. Not only with the performances, but also with the subject matter and just kind of going into, you know, the idea of how culture is changing, how jobs are changing, all that stuff seems more relevant than ever. So Up in the Air is my number 5.
Very cool.
Andrew, why don't you go next?
Well, yours was a Jason Reitman movie, mm-hmm. and so is mine.
Nice.
I'm going to go with his directorial debut, actually. Thank You for Smoking.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a fascinating movie.
Mm-hmm.
For the simple fact that you are rooting for the chief spokesperson for Big Tobacco on why smoking is cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's such an interesting movie. Like, Aaron... Aaron Eckhart...
Mm-hmm.
I always have trouble with his name. Aaron Eckhart's character is so charming and charismatic that you're like, smoking is cool. Yeah. You know,
I'm going to start smoking.
Yeah. It's funny because he does that whole, you know, like, bring your dad to school and have your dad tell us what he does for a living. And you're like, oh, so he's going to go to this school and tell little, like, 10-year-old kids that smoking is cool, you know, stuff like that. And he's part of that, I forget what it, like the four horsemen or whatever it is, you know, it was like him, alcohol and firearms and somebody else, you know, mm-hmm. Like they all meet up and for drinks and like all the stuff they have to deal with. It's a fascinating movie with a pretty interesting message to it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a good choice. Good choice. What do you got at number five, Ian?
I'm really glad that the graphics aren't here because I changed my list last minute.
Oh,
I felt
nice.
Too guilty.
Nice.
I wasn't going to do it, but now I can. So at number five, it's a bit of a cheat. He's not in it a lot, but Spider-Man 2.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
There is no cheat. There is no cheat. If he is in it, he is in it, and it counts. Yeah. And Spider-Man 2 is a great Spider-Man movie.
Yeah. It's not the most nuanced J.K. Simmons performance you're ever going to see. He's playing a caricature, and he's picked it up in a lot of the animated Spider-Man stuff as well, but he is J. Jonah Jameson. He is that mm-hmm. character. He does exactly what he's supposed to do, and it's not my favorite Spider-Man film, but it is my favorite one that he's in. He does a great job in that. It's just a fantastic entry in the Spider-Verse.
Spider-Man 2 is a very underappreciated movie.
I agree. Yeah, it was definitely in my honorable mentions.
The Tobey Maguire and the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man mm-hmm. 2 is the best out of all those.
Yeah, absolutely. And those Spider-Man films set the tone and the groundwork for what Marvel's doing now. They more than any other superhero film, Spider-Man did it first.
Yeah.
Well, and it sounds like, if my understanding of the winds blowing are correct, that they may be introduced as canon in the current Marvel universe. So we will see.
It seems to change every week. They're all in it. None of them are in it. None of them are in it.
Yeah. Well, we know Doc Ock is in it for sure.
Like, he is J.K. Simmons.
And J.K. Simmons. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting.
Number four.
My number four is Palm Springs.
Same.
Nice. Recent addition to the J.K. Simmons library. We've talked a lot recently, whether it be on year-end episodes or other Best Ever Challenges or just in reviewing the movie recently. How awesome this movie is. What a pleasant surprise and just a ton of fun to watch.
It's a list of shame for me from last year.
Oh, you should check it out, man.
Everyone I trust says it's amazing. I just need to do it.
Yeah. No, it is. It really is.
I don't know if it's one of those, like, I had such low expectations going into this movie.
Yeah.
And I was shocked by how good it is that I don't know, you know, now that it is getting such high praise going in with that high bar, do you know anything about the movie?
I know that Andy Samberg is in it, and there is a swimming pool.
I will say this.
I got that from the poster.
I'll say this. This is a movie I really did appreciate going in knowing nothing about it.
Yeah, it's a
so
fun
I don't want to say then. Too much, but go in knowing absolutely nothing and enjoy the ride.
Yeah,
it's
on Netflix
blast.
Over here. I'll probably stick it on tomorrow.
There you go.
Yes.
There you go.
There you go.
Andrew had that at number four as well. Ian, what is your number four?
I'm moving my list around again. The freedom, the chaos. 21 Bridges.
That's on my recent list of shame. I haven't caught 21 Bridges yet.
Do you want to know 21?
Watch this film.
It's Chadwick Boseman too, right?
Chadwick Boseman. It's not the best film of its type, but I really super thoroughly enjoyed it. I think it's fantastic.
I did want
he's
to
not
this.
In it. Yeah, he's not in it a huge amount. He is playing exactly the kind of cop that you think J.K. Simmons will play. But yeah, absolutely nails it. Chadwick Boseman is really understated in this film. It's simple enough premise, but it's just delivered. It's like Taken. It's not going to blow your mind, but it does what that genre should do with a movie.
Yeah.
It doesn't disappoint. Yeah, loved it.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out. That's a great recommend. Let's see, on to our number threes. This is where I have Zootopia. There's kind of that big run of Disney animated films, non-Pixar Disney animated films, that I think they kind of continue to be on, and they're just all really solid movies. And I think Zootopia even stands above a lot of those movies. You know, there's a lot of fun to be had here. There's some really beautiful themes here. It's interesting how some of the racial allegory in Zootopia has aged in the last decade or so, because there are some parts of it I think they would have done a little bit differently now. And then there are other parts of it that you're like, this is such a, you know, important, beautiful thing to say. And but I really like it. I really think Zootopia is great, and definitely recommend from me. So that is my number three. Andrew, what do you got at number three?
Well, you're going to trump it, so I might not even well say it, but La La Land.
Sure, I'll trump that. I'll trump that.
Yeah.
Ian, you're number three.
Number three, I've got Burn After Reading. Again.
Oh, you're trumped
nice,
by Andrew.
Nice, cool. I'm happy to talk about that. Yeah, that's fine.
All right, so we're on to our number twos. This is where we can talk about La La Land. Unless Ian trumps it. Unless Ian has it at number one.
No. we all know what number one is. Let's not play that game.
Yeah. Listen, I'm trying to maintain some semblance of suspense here.
You're doing the thing that you said, where the movie has a spoiler that it doesn't want to give you until everyone knows the spoiler to this.
This isn't a movie. This is a podcast. It's a different thing. Yeah. It's a different thing.
Technically, this was a, I'm curious what everybody's five through number two is.
Yeah, well, exactly, because we did the same thing last time, because we have the same film, but for a different reason.
Well, that's fun. Yeah. That's just poor planning
actually,
on my part.
Actually, you know what? I was actually kind of... no pun intended, up in the air about whether Aaron would have the number one or La La Land. Because I know how much Aaron loves La La Land. But
I do.
We're here now. Aaron, why is La La Land?
You made the right choice.
I had La La Land at number two. Andrew, you had it at number three? Is that
three.
Right? Yeah, you had it at number three. Look, guys, we won't be done talking about this, not to spoil our number ones, but Damien Chazelle knows how to make movies.
Especially movies about music.
Movies about music, but just I really feel like he has such a great grasp on how the audience is feeling, where they are, like he takes them where they need to be. So, yeah, Damien Chazelle is incredible. Musicals are my thing. The nod to all the different classical musicals in here is beautiful. The fact that it's original new music is astounding to me. I still find the soundtrack so very memorable and singable and fun. And, you know, the performances, it's... What's so beautiful about this movie to me is something that I think a lot of people didn't like about it. A lot of people wanted better singer dancers in the top roles, and I just think they are so perfect and human, and I think they dance great, and I think they sing great. You know, is it Gene Kelly or Fred Astaire? No, but it's Emma and Ryan. I mean, what are you going to do? Like, it's absolutely, their chemistry is... There's a reason they're in several movies together. You know, they do really good stuff together. I think it's hilarious. I think it's fun. It is one of my favorite movies of all time. So, yeah, La La Land.
I know this would have made my list if I'd seen it. This is a big list of shame one. I know seen it.
Do you usually like musicals?
I heavily, heavily dislike musicals. Okay. That's exactly
why. So there you go. So no, I totally get that.
I love Hamilton. I held off on Hamilton for so long, and I freaking love Hamilton. So I'm prepared to like La La Land. It just, for me to do it justice, I've got to catch it on a day where I can watch a musical.
Sure. I totally get that. Totally get
Ian,
that.
Ian, I'll tell you this. Don't let the opening segment...
check out. I'm done. You're singing at
me.
I'm leaving.
No, it's one of those things where like the opening segment is not the defining quality or even tone of the movie. This movie
is
much more
of what's coming next.
Exactly. It's much more interested in telling a story than doing dance numbers and having songs and stuff like that. And it's a movie that really understands how to make a song or a dance number impact the story as a whole, as opposed to it being its own entity. So as me, somebody who is not really a fan of musicals like you, I can really, really recommend La La Land. It's
brilliant.
It's superb.
I would say, you know, if the song part of it is not what you're into, pay attention to the filmmaking part of it. Even that opening scene is a simulated one shot, and it's absolutely incredible. It's a technical achievement, whether or not you're enjoying the music or not. But yeah. So anyhow, There's La La
Land. It's weird because I like music. I really, really like music. But for some reason, well, when you put music and movies together, it just, it.
Yeah.
More often than not, it's a crutch or it slows it down. But I'm sure La La Land does it well.
But singing a song and using a song to tell a story are, I mean, okay, when you sing a song, you are telling a story a lot of times.
Yeah.
But as far as using it in a visual sense, like, it changes things. It's a different feel to listen to music and to watch a musical. And the type of music that is in musicals is often almost a different genre of music. You know, it's very bright, it's very expressive, it's, you know, so there's that part of it.
And I definitely blame my brain for this, of just, right, you guys are going through some stuff here. You would not start dancing and singing. You all hate each other. He just stole your apple, and now he's dancing with a monkey. Could you just stop? Get back to the story, Aladdin.
So you have seen La La Land.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't realize you had, right, okay. You had actually seen it. All right, let's get to our number whiplash.
Nope, we I still got my number two.
Oh, okay.
Still got my number two.
Ian, yeah. What's your number two?
I don't know if this counts. I don't care. Invincible.
Oh. It doesn't. But
TV show.
No, we don't do TV shows here.
Do we not?
No, good. These are movies.
It's, I don't care. Let's just talk about Whiplash. Invincibles.
No, I got my number two still.
Oh, we didn't get your number two, Andrew? I thought we did for some reason.
No, I jumped. Burn After Reading.
Oh, that's what it was.
Let's do that
that's
instead.
What it was. And then we'll get to Ian's rule breaking. But yeah, let's talk about Burn After Reading first.
Burn... This movie is banana hammocks.
Yes.
It is insane because it can go back and forth between being No Country for Old Men, shocking violence, mm-hmm. to ridiculous Big Lebowski. It is every single Coen Brothers movie compiled into one. The craziness of this, you know, story going back and forth, and it's kind of like J.K. Simmons is narrating how insane everything is,
mm-hmm.
because he's just as like, this is ridiculous. He has the same thought process as the rest of us. I will tell you this right now, Brad Pitt steals this movie. This is like some of the most fun I've ever seen Brad Pitt have, and the climax / twist with him and George Clooney is one of the most shocking things. And like, it's one of those, like, where as soon as that moment happens in the movie, I'm like, I actually like got the breath knocked out of it.
Whoa.
I did not know that was going to happen. That's one of those like, oh, okay. So we're in No Country for Old Men now. Okay. So fine. Okay.
Yeah. We're back to that genre.
Yeah. We're whipping into that one. But, I think George Clooney is hilarious in this. Frances McDormand is always great. I think everybody is perfectly cast in this movie. Perfectly cast. It is one of my favorite Coen Brothers movies.
Nice.
This is one of the times where I realized actors can act differently. So I was 18 when this movie came out, and it was the first... So our ratings over here are a bit different. We have 12, 15, 18. So it'd be the first ever R-rated movie that I was able to see. And I was like, hey, you're not Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt does like all of the things with the action and stuff. He's acting completely differently.
He's just dancing on a treadmill, man.
He's just dancing about in a gym. It's great. And specifically J.K. Simmons stuff, it just kills me. It's like, so what did we learn, Palmer? Well, I guess we learned not to do it again, but I'm forked if I know what we did. Like, it's just brilliant that he is exactly what we're feeling. The guy that the agent that's bringing him all of these updates, he's waiting for a beating. He's waiting for him to be told, like, you've really screwed this up. And J.K. Simmons is just like, well, I guess that resolved itself.
Yeah.
What do we do next? Well, I don't actually think we need to do anything. I think we're good.
Yeah.
Okay.
J.K. Simmons is so perfectly exhausted by what's happening in this movie.
Yeah.
I'm not even mad. I'm just confused. It's great. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I really enjoy it. It's, you know, I just have a lot of other Coen Brothers I put above it usually. But yeah, no, I'm glad we're talking about it for sure. All right. Invincible. Ian,
we'll do it quick and I'll send an alternate for wherever this goes.
I think it's great. I love him.
It's I've got some issues with, and I think I'm the only person in the entire planet that has issues with the amount of gore. And I think it by the end of it, it is gratuitous. But regardless, what J.K. Simmons does and his, oh man, his acting is, and his voice acting in this is phenomenal. Like, there's every name under the sun is in this show.
Oh yeah, Steven Yeun.
But yeah, well, the entire Walking Dead cast is in this show, but he really steals it for me. And it might be because I'm picturing Fletcher from Whiplash the entire time, because it's in a lot of ways the same character. But
just
yeah,
his, quite my tempo.
His scenes were fantastic. Yeah.
I you're not the only person on the planet. I think the gore is gratuitous as well. I do think it needs some of it. I think it doesn't have the same brutal impact if you don't see some of that. But I do think there is a lot of, gory glory, you know, where it's like...
I don't quite need to see so many teeth leaving people's faces.
Yeah, we're doing this because we can, kind of thing. But story-wise, it's really well done. And it's dealing in some areas that... certainly lots of movies and TV shows have played in before, but it's doing it in an environment in a genre that hasn't really dealt with some of that stuff. And it's like, I don't know. It's like if the TV show The Boys decided to be a little deeper with its family dynamics and and consequences, personal relational consequences.
If anything, The Boys is more of a cartoon than Invincible is.
In some ways, yeah. In many ways, it is. All right. Now we will do our number, Whiplash.
Yes.
So congratulations, Whiplash. You win. All right. On to the honorable mentions.
I honestly don't know what else I can say about it.
No. It's fine. People get it. We love Whiplash. J.K. Simmons was in it, and not only in it, but...
all over it.
He is it. Yeah, it's my third. It's my third favorite movie of all time.
That's awesome.
And I think it's the best movie ever made.
Yeah, I've got it in the 30s. So. I think it's in the 30s for me. So yeah,
that's not quite my tempo, but yeah.
All right, let's talk about honorable mentions. Ian, did you have any that you wanted to throw out there?
Completely honestly, no, I did not.
Okay.
Sorry.
I'm going to throw out a couple that are kind of personal to me that a lot of people wouldn't think of. Hidalgo. I like Hidalgo more than most people. J.K. Simmons is in that. This is a horse racing across the desert movie.
It's a fun movie. I actually like it. It's
a good family movie. So anyhow, that is one that that you might want to check out. Klaus, I mentioned earlier, would come back. J.K. Simmons does a voice in the Netflix Christmas movie. I think came out last Christmas or the Christmas before.
Two Christmases.
Really solid Christmas movie. Really, really fun. So check out Klaus if you haven't. And For the Love of the Game, which is a Kevin Costner baseball movie. I've mentioned at times that I don't know how much of my love for this movie has to do with the fact that he's pitching for the Detroit Tigers. But I admit that that's part of it. But also I think the way the perfect game is handled is really intense and interesting. So I enjoy that movie. Yeah. And then Young Adult, speaking of Jason Reitman, wanted to mention that one as well, because I think it's really, really good. What do you got, Andrew?
Well, as long as we're talking about Jason Reitman, let's talk about Juno.
Yeah. Probably should
love Juno. It's a great movie. I think I was like the right age when this one came out, because I think it was either like fresh out of high school or still in high school. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. But Juno was just like... super amazing. J.K. Simmons as her father is hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
Another movie I'm going to throw out is I Love You, Man. I think it's a very underrated, friendship movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, both of them are just, the chemistry is perfect. And then a movie that I thought was going to be really bad, but turned out to be surprisingly good, as Patriot's Day. I thought Patriot's Day had some really powerful emotional moments in it. I thought it was going to be a bad Marky Mark movie, but no, this is like, I should have known. I'm not going to lie. I should have known that this was going to be, one of those powerful movies, because it's not only Marky Mark, but it's Peter Berg. And Peter Berg just has my number when it comes to movies. Like, I love Lone Survivor. and I'm trying to remember the oil rig one that he did with Mark Wahlberg. That was...
I want to say Deep Impact, but that's the asteroid movie.
No, it's Deepwater Horizon.
Deepwater Horizon.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that movie is... Both of those movies are superb. I think both Deepwater... And I think really they came out... That. They both came out the same year, which is crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yep.
They did a Deep Impact Armageddon.
Yeah, they did. Patriots Day. And that's going to be my honorable mentions.
Nice. I'm surprised you didn't throw the True Grit remake in there.
Oh, I will then.
Wait.
I forgot he was in that. Yeah.
Is J.K. Simmons in that?
Ish. Yeah, I don't remember, actually. I just, when my research was like, oh, True Grit, I didn't remember that.
He played the horse.
Same role as Hidalgo. That's amazing. Yeah.
There we go.
He's always got
When it comes great. To... When it comes to Westerns, I'm in the minority. I'm not really a John Wayne fan. Mm-hmm. And this newer iteration, I thought it was really good. Maybe on like a second viewing, I've only seen it once. A second viewing, I would like it more, but I just remember not being able to understand anything that he said.
Yeah. So, I think that's quite deliberate.
I think that is on purpose.
It's not very John Wayne-y, the original True Grit. It's probably the least John Wayne-y that he is.
Yeah, I just saw that recently, actually, for the first time. So the original. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to our buried treasure. Ian, as the guest, you get to finish buried treasure. Andrew, why don't you start us?
So with the Tomorrow War, I was thinking, oh, this is a really interesting, time travel movie. What would be a fun time travel movie to talk about in my buried treasure? So I'm going to go with the quote-unquote most accurate / overly complicated time travel movie of all time. Mm. Anybody want to take a guess?
12 Monkeys.
No, not 12 Monkeys. It's going to be Primer.
Primer.
Yes, good man. Primer. Oh, I love this film so much.
Okay, so I just recently rewatched Primer. I still love it. I think this is a phenomenal movie. But I'll tell you something. I went on YouTube afterwards, and there is... I wish I could remember the actual name of the video, but there is a... like an animated, like, play-by-play on, like...
somewhere.
Yeah, like... So, it's like a Aaron A, and then they call it, like, Abe A or Aaron B. Uh-huh. And it helps you keep track of where you are in the timeline. I'm not saying that the movie does a bad job at that. I'm just saying that this movie is so dedicated to being as accurate as they think time travel works that it can get confusing. But man, once you understand what this movie is and what this movie is doing, it is phenomenal. And it is one of the most simplistic plot synopses ever. It's the execution that makes it complicated, but also great. It's guys that want to go back in time and make money on the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
That's the movie. But
without bumping into themselves.
Without bumping into themselves. The amount of mathematics and philosophical implications that this movie goes on is crazy.
And that's what breaks them. That philosophical thing, as soon as that question is asked, there was no going back, because as soon as you've had the thought, at some point in the future, you will do this and break the time travel. The movie doesn't care about explaining how it works. It is the ultimate, I will trust the audience and hope you get there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Shane Carruth, who directed and is the main star in this as Aaron, I'm pretty sure he was a theoretical physicist before he... I think that was his job. I need to look it up so I'm actually right.
Hmm.
But he was actually a theoretical physicist before he wrote and directed this movie, because he wanted it to be as... He wanted a time travel movie that was as accurate as possible. And actually, speaking of The Tomorrow War, I actually think that The Tomorrow War follows kind of the same rules as Primer, in the sense that time travel can't exist until time travel is invented. You can't go back before, like, in Primer,
Tomorrow War does that. But
I think
Primer
it does,
because
I think they say in the Tomorrow War they can't send people back before that machine is turned on.
No.
It's just they have the one location they can send it, because it's 30 years in the past.
Yeah, it's a progressive 30 years.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah. So, yeah, it doesn't follow primer rules.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the very first time they come back is in the football field.
Yeah.
Yeah. For some reason, I thought, but no, you're absolutely right.
But that is...
I love the way Primer sets it up to where you can't go back in time before time travel is invented. You actually turn on the box.
I mean, that's logical, right? That's logical. Yeah. If time travel were invented that you could just jump willy-nilly, wouldn't we have, you know, met time travelers before? Like, you know, I know humans. We're not great at... Keeping secrets.
No. But we're also not good at believing other people too. So,
yeah, that's true.
But no, I'm right there
and
with.
Yet
you.
Some of the things we do believe.
I wanted to mention a show for my buried treasure that I'm not sure if I've recommended before. It was on Netflix, I think, for two seasons. Got canceled from Netflix and now is back on. I'm going to say Adult Swim. I should look it up because I'm actually not sure. Where it's showing, but it's Tuca and Birdie, T-U-C-A, Tuca and Birdie, B-E-R-T-I-E, and follows, the couple of, it's an animated show where the characters are vaguely animals or plants, and it follows, a toucan voiced, I should have looked all of this up.
It's Tiffany Haddish.
Yeah, it's Tiffany Haddish. And who is Birdie?
Ali Wong.
Thank you. Tiffany Haddish and Ali Wong are the main characters. Steven Yeun, who we've mentioned before, is the husband of Birdie as well. This is one of the quirkiest, most interesting TV shows I've ever seen. It has very, very much a female perspective on the world, and I love that. I love that there's like... you know, a show that I can get into to, you know, find a different set of eyes to view the world through. And this is kind of one of those shows for me. So it's probably unlike a lot of what you've seen. But yeah, it's really interesting. It is very adult, but yeah, something you might want to check out. Andrew, have you seen any of the episodes?
I've seen the pilot and I was intrigued by the art style, which is in and of itself very distinctive. I can't really think of any other show that comes anywhere close to this type of art style. It's almost not Van Gogh-ish, but I'm trying to remember his name.
The Salvador Dali artist.
Yeah, kind of Dali-ish, where it's like, yeah. Technically, that's where those body parts are supposed to be, but they don't look like the eye up here and then an eye down here.
Yeah,
exactly. It's interesting.
But
you're saying that I should give it a second chance.
I think the show deals with some serious like issues amongst this weird, quirky world, kind of like BoJack Horseman does. Like this show isn't like written as cleverly necessarily as BoJack Horseman. That's one of the things I like about BoJack is how intricately it's written. But it's similar in the idea that it's these strange characters that are dealing with deeper topics. The entire main storyline, one of the entire main storylines, is about the idea of just kind of. I'm trying to think of the right word for it because. Abuse is too strong of a word, not sexual abuse, but the idea of just the things that women deal with on a day-to-day basis and, you know, an employer that treats her in a certain way and the consequences that he does or doesn't face because of, like, it deals with some kind of really serious things that we need to cope with and wrestle with and try to understand better. So, yeah, I think there is something there in Tuca and Birdie. So if you want to check that out. Ian, what is your buried treasure for the week?
I'm going off book again. I'm just going to rewrite the email that I sent to Phil entirely and just apologize because I really liked Andrew's theme. So my buried treasure is Travelers, which is a TV show that ran for three seasons. It's on the UK Netflix. I'm not too sure where it is in America, but this has an interesting take on time travel. And I think it's done really, really well. It's actually closer to the Primer version of time travel, where once they've picked a moment that they've traveled back to, they can't travel before that because it will undo all of the stuff that they're now trying to fix. So the premise is there is a disaster that happens. I really liked it. There's a disaster in the future that is basically going to wipe out humanity. They think they've pinpointed where stuff has started to go wrong, and once they go back to that point, they can only travel back in time after that point, and people just keep getting sent back in time to fix the problems, and shenanigans ensue. There's definitely, it strays and it meanders, and I think each series is like 10 episodes, but it has some filler episodes as if it was a 26-episode season. And you're like, you really don't have time for this. But the episodes that are great are fantastic. And it needed and deserved another 4 seasons. And the Traveler fans are like on the same level as Firefly fans. They are screaming for more content, and I don't think it's going to come at this point, but watch it. It does wrap up. You don't have to worry about it leaving on a cliffhanger. It finishes. They finished knowing that there was going to be no more, so it is a complete story.
What I liked about Travelers is the fact that it took something that you'd seen so many times in the time traveling genre of films and added something new to it. Instead of people traveling back through time, it's their consciousness that travels back through time, and the consciousness kind of takes over a host in what we live in, like the modern times. So it's like, it's kind of invasive in a way, like you're taking over somebody's life. You know, there's ramifications for taking over somebody. Like, if somebody came back and they took over Aaron, like, you know, I'm sure Aaron's family would be like, where's dad?
And they deal with that a lot. Because the caveat is that, the consciousness is sent back, but it's into somebody that was going to die. So seconds before they die, they are taken over by somebody from the future. But they still have to live their normal lives and interact with their families. And there's lots of Wonder Woman 1984 sketchiness about that the show has to deal with.
All right. I feel like I should go back and change mine to 12 Monkeys. I didn't realize we were doing a theme here. So.
And Travelers has Monkeys theme.
That is Travelers, which I believe is on Netflix. Primer is streaming anywhere that I can tell, and Tuca and Birdie is on Adult
Great
Swim.
Great recommend. Is this film you can't watch?
You have to invent a time machine, and
you can go back
in time.
I'm sure you could find it on Apple or Amazon or somewhere and rent.
Yeah, you probably buy it. But who knows? Well, we did it, guys.
It's funny. I would recommend buying Primer instead of renting it. Simply for the fact, it's going to take multiple viewings to understand what's going on in this movie.
It has to be on Amazon. I mean, you can't spell Primer without Prime.
Amazon Prime.
All right, we did it, guys.
Thanks for listening, guys.
We did a podcast. Congratulations to everyone.
Jeff Bezos is actually
who set out to podcast. You have now done exactly what you set out to do.
Yay.
Thanks so much for joining us today for Sif Pop. It is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out once again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Big thanks to Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thank you, Phil.
And thank you to Ian for hanging out with us again today. Ian, now is your moment to tell people where to find you online, send them somewhere, promote something, whatever you want to do.
You can find me on Twitter at galactic_Dave. And I also do a movie podcast that's a bit haphazard and just talks about everything, to be honest, called An Englishman and an Irishman Go to the Movies. He is from Ireland. The Island.
Not the island or the Ireland the island?
Not the island from Lost, but an island called Ireland next to the island that I'm on.
And if you take a plane there, what happens at the end of your plane journey?
You land.
Say it. No. Ian. What happens?
Oh, I land.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah. Got it. I just went straight for the Lost theme music. Sorry. Yes,
as you always
do. Bit more abstract. Yeah.
Much love and gratitude to our Sif Pop members for making Sif Pop a real thing. Your monthly support helps out quite a bit. $3 a month is where it starts. You can check out the different levels and the different fun perks at patreon.com/sifpop. Lots of ways to connect with us. Feel free to leave a comment, a rating, or a review at Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. And if you want to send us an email, you can do that too. feedback@siftpop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show too, so let them know about it, and that listening is much easier than a dozen people landing in the same pool from hundreds of feet in the air. We will be back next week with Black Widow, and I'm not sure what we're doing for. We may do some Loki next week, but we'll definitely talk Black Widow, and we will see you then.
Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.